Good evening, all. It's great to be able to talk to you about something that's become rather time-consuming and a bit of a passion for me these days. So I do work at ARA, but I speak to you quite a lot in my capacity today as chair of the NEPC working group. And the NEPC, for those of you that don't know, is a unified voice of the 43 engineering organisations, representing an awful lot of engineers, 450,000. And we try to give policymakers, a single route into the engineering profession. But we've also embraced the social sciences because we understand the need for the behavioural sciences to be understood to implement change. And how do we do that? We do that through, publications, talks like this, pieces in the media and the news. So we try to reach out in a number of ways to send the message about what's needed to be done for net zero in terms of a systems approach, but also the specifics of, some implementation. And I would say we are absolutely moving to an implementation stage now. But why a systems approach? Let me stand back for a minute. Is, we see there on the right-hand side the number of systems that need to be transformed. So this is a system of systems. And if we were going to achieve net zero by 2050, it absolutely requires a rapid and simultaneous synchronized transformation. And by using systems approach, it allows you to take on board all the sort of various relevant factors in the decision-making and allows for decisions to be made across a number of areas of policy. Because I think for the UK, this is not just about net zero, it's about leveling up, it's about Britain's place in the world. So there's a lot of agendas which need to be focused together if we're going to be successful. And that's what I mean by when I say there, the co-benefits should be recognised and enabled as part of net zero. It's very easy, I think, to put off the day when we will deliver net zero by saying the technologies are not here or we need further innovation. But I think the systems approach allows one to identify low regrets options, decisions we can make now. I know that there will be minimal unintended consequences. And I want to just look at it from a slightly different perspective. How would you describe the benefits of a systems approach? And forgive me talking virtually in Scotland that I show a map of the London Underground, but systems approach allows you to have a picture of the whole. It enables an understanding of the complexity, the issues and the behaviour. Is it the passengers? Is it the train? Is it the rail? Is it the signalling? What is it? It allows one to interrogate the interfaces, to experiment with different levers, to imagine scenarios. This station is closed or those trains are not coming. You can imagine that. And you can begin to anticipate the human interaction and be ready to be able to deal with it. So I think that the systems approach gives us an opportunity to collaborate on a global vision, but enable us to also deliver locally. And not only do we have the London Underground, the London transport system as we see it today, but a future is coming, of electric scooters and autonomous vehicles. So it allows you, a systems approach allows you to look into the future and examine the changes that might be required. Now, I think Jim has talked quite a lot about Scotland there, and that's very useful because it is this local implementation which is going to be really important. But I like this sequence of slides, which is from this report by the Royal Academy of Engineering, Sustainable Living Places. And it's around, having global outcomes in the UN SDGs, identifying strategic priorities, moving those into local requirements, and making sure they can be effectively delivered locally and in a joined up way. And I always, when I'm talking about this, like to praise the Committee for Climate Change in that they identify the various pathways. And I think that really helps people to gain a broader understanding of the amount of change that is required, and whether it be in transport, electricity, land use, or agriculture. And again, it sends this message of simultaneous and synchronized change. And on the right is a diagram actually from the 2015 Royal Academy of Energy report on a critical time for energy policy. So that's quite a few years ago now, but it was signaling, the need for long-term planning, looking out into the future, and is recognizing the short amount of time it is actually till 2050. And I think Jim said already, 1,500 weeks from now. So we need to be making progress this every year if we're going to achieve our ambition. And then I sort of like to think about, you know, success. You know, how do we know we're going to be successful? And just before speaking, I saw there was a comment on the chat about project management and planning ahead. So I think success doesn't happen. Success has to be planned for and has to be, I almost think, the backcasting, you know, thinking about the successful outcome and then working back from that is the way to achieve a successful outcome. And we all talk about the vaccine program today, but the London 2012 was a success because there was focused effort on achieving an outcome. And I think we know from looking at the many sports that it took a multiplicity of interventions to be successful. But in the work in the NEPC and in the workshops we've held and in the particular focus areas, whether it's been on decarbonizing construction or aviation or others, we recognize some key elements to success. And this is, you know, getting the leadership and governance right. And Jim has talked a little bit about that already, and the advice that the CST gave to the Prime Minister, quite a lot was around that element that I can see coming into place. That we need to plan and we need to get the pace right. So I think at the moment, the key message is, you know, there is an urgency to act now on the things we can deliver. We need to have in place an environment which enables, and whether that be policy, regulation, standards, measurement and procurement. And I'm sure there's many other aspects, but it isn't only one, it's all of these acting together that are important. And collaboration, you know, we need to collaborate across all the government departments, and I am seeing that happening now. But it's also collaboration between government, academia and business to help solve the problems, to innovate. And international collaboration, because this is a global problem. And collaboration with the public, because quite a lot of this transition and change is going to require behavioural change. And also I'd like to talk to that, you know, are we looking sufficiently far ahead to identify the skills that are going to be needed in this new world? And I think that there could be much more work done on identification and training so that we are ready to deliver these challenging and ambitious agendas. And then so that we don't get too hung up on, you know, systems engineering and systems maps and thinking it's really complicated or this going to deliver a solution, I just say it's only a map. You know, when those early people in the Eastern Europe created this map on a tusk, it was them understanding their valley and for them to be able to navigate their world. And then when we moved the Genoese map of 1457, again, that was their view of the world which they were trying to navigate. We've moved to a more, the map we learned from a school of how the world is set out. And then I think a moment in time came when we looked back on our world and saw our blue planet and made us much more aware of climate change. So I advocate that we only create a map or systems map that is sufficient to enable us to get the right perspectives and to enable us to collaborate. And then the solutions will emerge through that, you know, exploration of the subject, through investigation, through adding data. The more we learn, the better we're able to understand the problem. It'll lead to our better understanding. And that's where we're beginning to put, we're able to put time against it as well. So I would finish by saying, you know, our more complex world today, you know, more data-rich, more technology-enabled world needs integrated systems, both for the planning and the delivery of solutions that we are going to need to meet climate change. So thank you all for listening. I shall pass back to David.